Good morning, Tony, and good morning, everyone. Just want to welcome you to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, Illinois, and I am the host for our presentation today. And today is Sunday, November 30th, 2025. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, November 28th. They are the following: the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, that number is 22,988. That's 22988. For the 10 a.m. meeting, 22,989. That's 22989. This morning, A Vision for You presents Living Joy and Thanksgiving in Recovery. You know, we gather each morning to study the big book, and why do we do that? Well, we're certainly hoping for a solution to this problem that it's a very misunderstood problem, at least it was for me. And you know, we analyze and we dissect this text every morning. We pore over the meaning of each syllable and hoping our interpretation is the correct one. We just want to get to a solution, right? And yes, indeed, the recovery can be dissected, just as a frog can be dissected. You know, but the thing is that the frog dies in the process, and the insides of that frog are perhaps discouraging to any but the purely scientific mind. Maybe so too with our text. But you know, far better for me to stay true to recovery simplicity rather than some tale of complexity that I want to build in. And I don't think I'm alone in doing that. And perhaps I know much less today than I did when I first came in. Boy, did I know a lot. You know, addiction, especially in the realm of compulsive overeating, can feel like a relentless struggle that pulls people like you and me away from our true selves and our spiritual paths. And the disease, it distances one from a sense of purpose and a connection to a higher power. Forget about a higher power. You know, there's that barrier. And, you know, in contrast, though, recovery through the 12 steps offers something entirely different. You know, a profound spiritual awakening, a revolutionary change. And this transformation is revolutionary because it challenges, you know, challenges the old paradigms. I've heard it said it's kind of a rebirth of sorts because we experience a complete shift in our identity, in our mindset. Our priorities get shifted. And the process invites individuals like you and me to confront the causes and conditions. We get down to those causes and conditions, and we seek a higher power, you know, allowing us to find some congruence with this higher power, a higher power of our own understanding, thank goodness. And each step serves as a guide to self-reflection and hopefully some humility and service along the way. And we learn a new way of living. And yes, we utilize the tools of recovery as they were intended, as the handrails that, you know, maybe they're necessary to buffer the suffering, the uncomfortability, kind of like the caterpillar shedding its skin. And after all, there could be no butterfly who bypasses the natural phase of uncomfortability, right, as you shed the skin. And so we engage in this lifelong journey. If we're blessed, we learn to replace destructive habits with spiritual practices, spiritual principles, the steps, you know, and this fosters inner peace and resilience. And then hopefully what's promised that I've seen, maybe you have too, is we cultivate a deeper relationship with God. We discover love, acceptance, and purpose beyond food. And by aligning ourselves with spiritual principles, we move beyond the confines of compulsive reading. It's lifted. It's eradicated. That obsession is driven out. And so what once felt like a dark prison becomes a pathway to light. On page 95, in the AA 12 and 12, they capture this pretty well. It just says very simply, an honest regret for harms done, genuine gratitude for blessings received, and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets we shall seek. So gratitude turns what we have into enough. It's now enough. If the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be more than sufficient, more than sufficient. So joining us this morning to share her personal story of this transformation, this gratitude as a result of the application of the 12 steps is Jeannie B. I'm going to spell Jeannie because I had someone once said, spell the name, J-E-A-N-N-I-E. That's Jeannie B. And Jeannie is a recovered compulsive overeater from Florida. And she's dedicated to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much. I'm very excited, very honored to be here today. I love this meeting. I love Vision. If not for Vision, I'll say right at the top, I don't believe I'd be recovered. I believe I would be in my misery. I would be in my addiction and in my misery if not for Vision. So thank you, everyone who makes this meeting possible. Before I get too into my story, I want to tell everybody I don't mean to say anything controversial here today. I do tend to use words that are synonymous with other words. I'm not somebody who gets too much into the specific meaning of a word. If it means something to my heart, I love it. For example, I love the term food sober, or I'll use sobriety or sober. I don't mean that to be as different from a recovered compulsive overeater. It just is a word, a phrase that resonates with my heart. So please take whatever resonates with you, whatever supports you, I pray it will support you. And if you're a newcomer here today, welcome. Or if you're struggling or in pain, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I hope something I say here resonates with you and makes it into your heart to help you find your way. I hope I can offer you some hope, because that is what people offered me when I first showed up in these rooms. The hope of what is possible. I find myself already getting emotional because this program, I just don't know where I would be without it. And if you're a regular, thank you for being here. I pray I will say something that will make you remember your own journey in a way that will deepen your recovery. I'm an addict, and I am happy to share with you today my story. I had freedom and then a slow and increasing imprisonment. And now I'm back, slowly and certainly back to a new freedom, to a joy and thanksgiving I absolutely did not think was possible. I thought it was out of reach because I slowly descended into addiction. And then there was an intervention. And then there was a slow ascension into recovery. And then recovery, and then recovery, and then recovery until I found joy. A joy at the end of it. And I'm not done. I'm a work in progress. Obviously, I know that. But I, at this point in time, right now, today, I can tell you I am happier than I can remember ever being. And I can't believe I'm even saying that. But every day, no matter how much is going on in my life, and there's a ton, no matter the joys, the ups and downs, I'm still happier than I've been. So my story is a story of ups and downs, and that may not be typical, but it's honest. I did get some interventions along the way, even as I was descending into addiction. So those pieces, I think of them as puzzle pieces, they came together to really serve me as I finally found my way out and into these rooms and into recovery. So I'd like to begin my story with my daily prayer. I surrender to the flow of the universe, trusting the doors that open and close before me. All is well, and all will be well. Amen and amen. So I was born on Long Island, New York, in 1968. Yep, just turned 57. I remember so well being 5 years old. I had this kind of idyllic five-year-old childhood. I lived in this amazing neighborhood with these fun kids. We could play in the streets and I could wander. Wandering is probably my favorite thing. I could wander on my bike. I could wander through the forest. I could just wander and be one with the universe. I didn't care about time. I wasn't attached to a watch. I was kind of that free-range sort of kid that we just came back when it was dinner time. But it was just so nice to be in the moment with the bugs, with the leaves, with the sky, and with the kids of the neighborhood. And I had pretty nice parents, too. My mom was, she took care of us. She was an at-home mom. But my dad, man, he, oh, my heart. He would wrestle. I have a sister, and he would wrestle with us. And he would ride us on his back or on the go in the pool with us and put us on his shoulders. And just every loving, I can just remember him growling with love for us. And taking naps with us, and his affection, it just warmed my heart. It's a love like I just can't even think of these days. I tell you that story because it's going to play into things later. So even then, even in this idyllic childhood, I started to realize I had a problem with food. We didn't have sugar in my household. This was a thing, maybe it was the 60s, maybe it was just my parents, but we didn't have sugar except on special occasions. But when those occasions came, birthdays, holidays, first communions, etc., my mother would always bake the cake, not anything fancy, you know, from a box, but I was the bowl girl. I would obsess about the bowl. When's the bowl going to be ready? When's the bowl going to be ready? Can I lick the bowl? Well, can I have more than my sister? Like, can I? But wait, I should get it first. I would argue for the bowl. And then another story that comes to mind is that at the end of each school year, when we got all A's, we were allowed to have one box of sugared cereal, one box of non, you know, grape nuts sort of cereal. And I remember so well that my sister's box would be portioned out and it would last 7 to 10 days, and mine would be gone in 2 to 3 hours. I started my first sort of binge. But that was all that went. I was a pretty thin kid. I was a pretty normal kid, other than I already had a problem with food. Then when I was almost 10, my whole life changed. We moved from Long Island, New York, where we were surrounded by friends, this awesome neighborhood, our family, everything. And my father's job took us to rural Georgia. And then my father left the family. And we had no extended family, no wonderful neighbors. In fact, because we were in rural Georgia, I was considered a Yankee. And they made fun of Yankees who were on, quote unquote, the other side of the Civil War, which they were still arguing. And so we were immediately faced disdain. And I had an incident where I drowned. And I also got pretty chubby. It was not a good time. It was not a good time. And then my mother stopped being an at-home mom, and so I became what was then called a latchkey kid. For those of you who don't know, a latchkey kid is the kid who comes home to an empty house and has the key. And for the first time, I was arriving, opened that door, and there was no one there. And it was there that my sugar addiction got some oxygen to fuel its growth. This was my first level of descension into addiction. So what we had in our cabinet was these boxes, some boxes of cake and brownie mix. So what I would do is I would open up one of these boxes and make what is a sludge, basically just the mix and enough water to make it kind of have clumps, but still enough liquid, basically just a sugar bomb, sugar flour bomb. And then I would eat that as my little afternoon snack. It never went too far. It never got crazy, but I continued to eat it and eat it, I don't know, most days, if not every day. And I would hide the empty boxes under the couch. And I remember really well one day when my mother decided to move the couch to vacuum. And there were, I mean, I'm going to say 12, at least 10 empty boxes under there. And she was mortified and like, what is this? What's going on? And somehow, some way, I talked my way out of it. I don't even know how. I know that I was super embarrassed and I was like super afraid of what her reaction would be because I was just embarrassed and ashamed, which would be a theme of my food life. But there it was. This is how it went. And then when I was 15, I got a job at McDonald's. My next door neighbor had a McDonald's store And I love that job so much, but this is where my binge eating really took off. Really, really took off. See, when I worked at McDonald's, whatever was in the bin, we could have at the end of the night. So I worked there for 2 years, and I absolutely loved this job, but I also loved the binging. I could make French fries. I could make whatever burger I wanted or whatever sweets I wanted, and I did vary back and forth between what I got. First, I went to something sweet. Then I went to something not sweet, and I put on 2 sizes in those 2 years. And nothing crazy, again, but it was where I really learned to binge eat. It's also when I really learned to lie and cheat and steal. I can even remember I was one of those kids where they would send chocolate bars home for the kids to sell as a fundraiser. And not into sales, like I'm not a seller, but I would slowly but surely eat these bars. And then I needed something to give them the money. So I stole from my mother's very slender purse. It reminds me of the story of Lois's slender purse, because my mom's purse was very slender. After my father left, we were in a financial crisis. My father was the one who had all the money, and he paid his little child support as he could get away with by the courts. So it was. I lied, cheated, and stole, put on 2 sizes, and headed off to college. In undergrad, I had one of these wonderful interventions. Somehow, we have someone on the line who talks about search and rescue missions from God. And I had some search and rescue missions. You'll hear that here. One of the search and rescue missions was I had a girl on my floor who became my best friend in my dorm. And where the cafeteria was, you know, all you could eat, any meal, all the time. I didn't know which way I was going to go. I know I was ashamed. I dieted through high school. I never really put on that much weight, but I was deeply ashamed. My mother was also obese, and she was in my high school. She was a high school teacher, phenomenal mathematics teacher, but she was obese, and I was very embarrassed. I am very ashamed to tell you I even participated in making fun of her to the other children because I wanted to distance myself. And I honestly believe it's my mother's obesity and my embarrassment over it my whole life that kept me from allowing myself to get too obese, because my story is one of binging and then restricting. So I restricted through high school. I measured food. I counted calories, and then I would binge at McDonald's. So I would go back and forth. I was a full-on addict, but this was my pattern, overeating and then undereating all the time. So when I got to college and I met my best friend, her name is Alexia, and she was a natural, just a calm, healthy eater. Nothing like rigorous dieting. She just ate really well. She was vegetarian. I hadn't been vegetarian until that point. I became vegetarian then and still am. And she just casually ate really healthy. Ate this for breakfast, this for lunch, same thing every day, this for dinner, one little treat, little thing, like very little. And she went to a gym and exercised. And all I did was become best friends with her and follow what she did. And I found a lot of the answers. Those are a huge number of pieces I got right there. It was like, there is an answer. There was a lot of hope in what she gave and what she gave me. And I remember at some point, a really important story to me is I got into therapy in undergrad, you know, when it's free through the health center. And I remember very well, I can't remember what the assignment was, but my therapist asked me to draw a picture. And I drew a picture. Now I'm probably 20 years old. And I drew a picture of me sitting in a chair with a birthday cake in front of me and a force behind me, like a demonic kind of force, holding the sides of my head and training my eyes on that cake. I had no choice but to stare at it. And then the cake was melting into a spoon, and then it was going into a needle that was going into my arm. That's how much I was owned by food. That's how much I had no choice and no power, and I knew it. But I didn't know any way out. I mean, I knew this way my friend Alexia had lived her life, but she clearly wasn't an addict. She did not have this drive. She did not have these cravings the way I did. So I continued. I went through graduate school. The worst I ever got was after undergrad. I went to the undergrad at the University of Georgia in Athens, and then I moved back to Long Island. And the worst I ever got was I lived next door to a grocery store in that first job after college, where I had no friends, no community, really just this job and a church that I was going to. Next door was a grocery store. And every day, every single day after work, I would tell myself, you're not going to eat, you're not going to eat, you're not going to binge, you're not going to binge. And every single day, eventually, this force would feel like a force driving me to walk the fence to the grocery store. And every day I bought a box of Little Debbie somethings, and I ate the entire box, sometimes with dinner, sometimes for dinner. But that was the worst it got. That was the worst it got in terms of everyday binging for me. And I knew, literally, I know we talk about geographics here sometimes as a bad thing. This is one time where pulling a geographic really worked for me. I did wind up moving, and in moving, taking that temptation literally out of my eyesight really, really did help. So eventually I moved into New York City, and I had a friend who was a runner, and he taught me. I was like, I can't run. I had no athletic ability. And he's like, okay, just walk one block, run one block. And the city blocks in New York are very small. And I started doing that with him. He was extremely encouraging and taught me how to be very encouraging to myself, which I really hadn't been. As you may imagine, I was full of shame and embarrassment over my body continually. I had never gotten back down to a normal weight. So I was embarrassed, and I would talk to myself in very shaming ways. What's wrong with you? You should know better. You should be stronger than this. Because in every other area of my life, I had a lot of self-discipline. I was extremely, extremely educated. I'm extremely disciplined. I would do really well in jobs, at work, in anything I put my mind to, except for food. And the way I would talk to myself was terrible. And so he taught me to talk to myself much more nicely. So again, a bunch of puzzle pieces from this man. And he gave me running, which I still run to this day. And it calms me down. It centers me. It brings me great grounding and joy and fitness. So I love it very much, and I'm very grateful. But just as equal of a gift is the way I talk to myself when I'm running. I'm in Florida, so I admit this, but the last couple of days have been what we call Florida freezing. So 28-mile-hour winds and 50 degrees, and I'm still out there running. And my words to myself, instead of shaming myself, you should be faster, you should go further, it's like, look, you're out here. You did it. You won. Look at you. This is great. You know how many people would have used this weather as an excuse not to run today? Look at you. You're out here. So I got an encouraging voice for myself. I got an encouraging voice for myself. This has served me to this day. As I made my way through recovery, that encouraging voice made a big difference. So from 25 to 45, I really couldn't get less than 142 pounds. That was the weight I would always seem to see on my scale. By the way, I'm 5'1". So 142 pounds is like way too much. But I also have been as high as 170. I couldn't, no matter my restricting and binging, I couldn't get past it. And I also couldn't understand it, because I really did think, well, everybody else just gets a better body. Everybody else just has a better metabolism. I would compare what I ate when I was restricting to what they ate. And they seemed to get away with things that I couldn't get away with. And increasingly over time, I was irritable. I was depressed. And I was wondering, again, why I had it so much worse than other people and why I couldn't be happy. I did spend quite a few years suicidal, where I kept enough pills in my house that I could choose to end my life at any time. And I didn't even really take it that seriously because I had drowned and I had experienced life on the other side. So the idea of dying doesn't hold the same thing that it does for others. But I did not. I got rid of those pills eventually as I became further in my life and further in my career. So when I was around 50, I'd come to accept that I was a food addict. I am a food addict. I searched high and low for food plans that would allow me to eat more and more. So this is where I got another bunch of pieces. I found my way somehow into a community of whole food, plant-based addicts who were figuring out how to eat really well so they could have high nutrition, high health, and still eat much more volume than other people. And that really, really works for me and still does to this day. I love this community and I love the fact that I can speak openly about being an addict. And that really worked for me. It gave me a whole bunch of pieces, but what it didn't give me, it didn't give me because I was still an addict, you see. I could not stop the cravings. I could not stop the binging. So no matter what other solutions, what number of puzzle pieces I had, I still didn't have it because I was still an addict. I would still binge. My binges became less frequent, but they became bigger. The amount of food I would consume became much bigger. It wasn't just one thing of this. It wasn't just one thing of that because now I'm an adult. I have money. I could do whatever I wanted, and man, did I. I would restrict and hold on and hold on, but then I would just go absolutely crazy. Of course, then I would, you've heard other people's stories, but mine is I would binge my face off. Also, I'm single, so I could get away with having wrappers and things around the house. And then somebody would knock on the door. I would say, hold on. And I would shove everything into a cabinet. And then I would answer the door, get the crumbs off my face. I'm doing it right now. Get the crumbs off my face, get the crumbs off my clothes and say, hey, what's up? As if nothing was wrong. I couldn't stop binging. So I had come to accept, hey, I'm a food addict. This is just the way it is. I'd come up with a little comedy routine about how everything's a single serving for me. And one day, I walked into a doctor's office. I have a heart issue, which I don't know if it's related to my food addiction or not, but I have a pacemaker. And I was walking into the electrophysiologist's office, and I gave this guy behind the screen my speech of, hey, everything's a single serving for me. Give me a box of cinnamon rolls, single serving. Give me a cake, single serving. Give me a family size bag of whatever, single serving. And I was, you know, you may as well put me on a comedy club. And he looked at me straight in the eye, smiled gently, and said, have you ever heard of OA? So calm, so sweet. Now that I think of it, it reminds me of my friend Alexia in college. No extra energy to it. Just that calm, sweet, have you ever heard of OA? I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, there's a website called OA.org. There are 15 questions. You decide if it fits for you, which I really loved. I didn't want anybody telling me anything. Stubborn, Scorpio, growly, you're not going to tell me. And there he was saying, I could decide. And he said, if you feel like it does fit for you, there'll be a list of meetings. Find one that draws you. Sure enough, I went home, went on OA.org, did the 15 questions, about 12, 13 of them fit me, found a meeting. 2 days later, I was in my first meeting, and I never left, and I never relapsed. But I can tell you this, a lot of that's luck, because if anybody had told me that abstinence was a requirement at that first meeting, I'm not sure I would have stayed. And they didn't push the God thing too much, thank goodness, because although I'm a deeply spiritual person, God had never, this is my experience, my belief, God had never helped me with my food in the past despite pleas and prayers. So I didn't want to hear about God. I didn't want to hear about that. So I get to my first meeting, and I am so cynical. I am so suspicious that I won't give my name. I won't give my phone number. I won't speak. I won't do anything. All I did was go and listen. Certainly not going to give any money when y'all pass that. Not doing anything like that. And I didn't even like I looked around the room. I didn't feel like any of these people looked like me, like I would vibe with them, like they were going to be friends of mine. Nothing like that. Nothing. Nothing like that. But what I did get by 1 hour later was I got hope. Because the information I got was amazing. It was, you are not alone. I didn't know. I really, really didn't know. I didn't know anybody else ate like I ate. I didn't know anybody else had cravings and obsession the way I did. I really didn't. Even though there were other food addicts in my family, it didn't manifest the same way. I had never heard of anybody else binging. I'd never seen anybody else binge. I mean, I'd heard of bulimia or anorexia, but those were things I wished I had been. Because, of course, my goal was to be thin and eat whatever I want. So bulimia felt like if I could only, not that I didn't try, it just didn't work for me, but if I could only. I'm very grateful for people who have shared their stories that I no longer see that as the dream I wish I'd been able to get. So hope is what you gave me at that first meeting. Hope is all I needed because I came back for meeting after meeting after meeting and more was revealed. And more was revealed. I can only tell you that it started with hope and then it was layer upon layer. After a few meetings, what I decided was I would give this program 4 months. I had read the 12 steps. And, you know, number one is we admitted we were powerless over food, no problem. That my lies had become unmanageable, questionable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So what I have been told is it just has to be a power greater than me and it can't be me. No problem, because I believe the power of the program. When I saw it in recovered people's faces, what I saw was recovery, recovery, recovery. Okay, great. You've got an answer? Great. You've got a solution? Great. Let's solve it. So I'm a very practical person. If you teach me a concept, I want to know how to apply that. This book gives that answer, gives both answers. Gives me the concept and the doctor's opinion, and it gives me the application into action, into in the 12 steps, there's action in how it works and into action. How can I actually apply these things? So I decided I would devote myself for 4 months. You got 4 months. I will fully give myself over to this program. This will be the power that I am submitting to, that I'm surrendering to. And at the end of 4 months, as someone said, we will be happy to return your misery. Well, by 4 months later, I was on a pink cloud, had never gone back to food. My last binge, I can't remember because it was before I went to my first meeting. And I was fully convinced that this was the answer. Fully convinced that was the answer. What I now know is I was on a pink cloud and I had done the steps and I was sort of doing what I call a good enough program. I didn't get that much the first time through. I did all my steps. I did the inventory in step four. I did step five and shared it. I did all the things six, seven, and I made my amends. I made a list of amends, did my amends, all that I could think of at that time. I think of it as those first couple of layers of the onion. I did what I could do at the time, and it was really good enough. When I think of people who talk about taking people very quickly through the steps, it makes sense to me because it's just to get them through good enough and then to keep going. I did not have great sponsorship experiences, by the way. I had three sponsors who had different issues, and it didn't matter because it was good enough. It was good enough, and I can tell you what they gave me. Sponsor number one gave me an introduction to vision, without which, where would I be? Every day I'm on this vision line. Every day I'm carried. I think of myself as indoctrinating myself. My brain needs a little washing. Is this a brainwashing? Okay, I need some brainwashing. I need to inculcate. I need to indoctrinate. I need to put these thoughts, this recovery in my ears every day. What I do first thing, I do it when I run. I do it after my meditation time, is recovery. I want it in my ears. I want it front of mind every day. I pray I never stop that because there are things that are working in my life and I don't want to stop doing the things that are working. And if I ever do find myself in food thoughts, I need to come back to what works. Jeannie, what works in your life? And those answers are very clear. It is prayer, my time connecting with the spirits of the universe, two-way prayer, meditation, exercise, meetings, vision, connection with other fellows, service, and every day trying to catch the little irritation. But I'm jumping ahead a bit because, again, I was doing a good enough program. Got through the first time, good enough. Continued to go to listen to vision. But I found myself, as I think many people do, still full of feelings. As I've heard on this line, oh, if I lost weight, you're going to feel better. Oh, yeah, I'm going to feel better. I feel anger better. I feel mad. I feel irritated. I feel judgmental. I feel all these things better. All the restlessness, irritability, and discontent. Man, it was all coming up. Old wounds, new wounds, ongoing irritations, the job, the driving, you name it. I had to work through it. I had to go back through, listening to the meetings every day, going back through the big book, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. This is what works. This is what worked for me. I did another round and another round, and I kept working. And what happened for me is that, so I'm full, imagine me, I'm full of resentments. I'm full of everything. I'm top of my head, like that's where the water level is. And each time I would work on something, process something, get better, focus on the positive, turn to be of service, I was improving bandwidth a little more and a little more and a little more. And then I got a little more. And then once I had a little more bandwidth, I was willing to open my eyes a little bit more and go a little bit deeper and go a little bit deeper. And it's been 3.5 years, 3 years and 8 months-ish that I've been in the rooms and been abstinent. As I got increasing amounts of recovery, though, I got happier. I got less irritable and less able to be irritated. I catch myself more quickly. I notice very quickly when I'm in judgment, when I'm in gossip, which I'm prone to, when I'm in judgment of like what you should be doing. But I have the 10th step now. I have the 10th step. And for me, the 10th step adds a couple of elements that that are exactly in the book, but I don't think they're contradictory. For me, a 10th step starts with venting. I need a moment to vent. So if something's going on and I just need a moment to vent it, I vent it, and then I give a growl because that's my thing. Some noise for me, it's like, that's my growl. And then I'm ready to turn the page and take responsibility. Then I'm ready to say, Jeannie, where are you selfish, self-seeking? Where are you fearful? Where are you resentful? What is going on? Where am I responsible? I look. There are, luckily, again, practicality. Somebody created a list of questions to help me see, because those general questions did not do it for me. But when I read the question, oh, am I angry that somebody didn't follow my script? Oh, am I angry that somebody didn't do something the way I thought it should be done or the way they should do it? Oh, there's no quicker way to catch me up, to pull me up by my bootstraps there. Well, there's the answer. Once again, I wish somebody would do what I wish they would do. I wish somebody else would do what I wish they would do. So I believe in repetition and habituation. Repetition and habituation. There's a lot of brain science in this too. There's a lot of practicality and there's a lot of brain science and there's a lot of spirituality. So now what I as I said, the bandwidth just got more and more. I wanted to tell you that in this year, we just went through, you know, we're kind of beginning again. And earlier this year, we went through on vision, the eighth and ninth steps. And I, once again, I couldn't believe it, but it's 3.5 years in and I found three people, situations that I needed to make amends to. I mean, big ones. I wouldn't have found them earlier because I didn't have the bandwidth to see. I didn't have eyes to see and ears to hear this, but now I did. Now I had more space. Gosh, I'm smiling and laughing because it's not just space to see what's wrong with me, but the space I'm creating is joy. I'm now more social. And the feedback I get from others, not just about being my ideal weight, which, by the way, amazing. I love being my ideal weight. That's why I came in here. Not only am I my ideal weight, but I'm consistently. This is what I weigh. This is my size of clothing, period. Remember, I'm only 5'1", so it's little. And I love it. This was my dream come true. What I didn't know I was going to get was the rest of it. The feedback I get from others is, wow, you're so much easier to be around. That caught me up. That caught me up, right? That was a wake-up call. Easier to be around? Was I difficult to be around? Because I didn't see myself clearly. Because that denial of who I really was is what was necessary to keep me in addiction. If I had truly seen how irritable I was to others, how reactive, how judgmental I was, the shame would have filled me. I don't know that I would have been able to continue on. But what I did was I shut down a lot of my world, and my world became quite isolated in my addiction because it was me and my best relationship, which was my food. It was my comfort. It was my entertainment. It was my joy. It was Tuesday. It was in sorrowful times, stressful times, and no special times. Just I feel like at times, but certainly the holidays. And here we are, the holidays, the eating season. Not for me. Don't even care. Don't care about it. Don't want it. I want what I have, which is freedom. Yeah, there are sacrifices. Yeah, there are sacrifices. I'll take them because I'm happy. Not just because I'm recovered, not just because I'm glad I'm thin, but because I'm happy. And that's why I wanted to make this talk today about being happy, because I thought it was good enough, and I probably would have taken good enough to be thin, to be my size, to be consistently my size, and to be able to have that joy. But that's for me, it's the beginning. It's the beginning of what I got. It's the end of what I wanted, but it's the beginning of what I got. And what I got is joy back. Back to that five-year-old that I was describing to you earlier, who was free. She didn't have concerns. She could wander. And although my life is incredibly complex and sometimes complicated at this time, it's certainly very, very busy. The joy I feel matches that little girl who I would love to fully reclaim. As I wander and I ask, where is the open door? Where would you have me be? Where is the open door? Where can I be of service? That sort of surrender and giving in to life and seeing where life takes me, being in the joy of my dog and my friends and my running and my work, which is incredibly fulfilling. It's all just a different life. At this level of recovery, I get to be a different person. I get to feel so differently in my life. And make no mistake, abstinence for me is where every day starts. Abstinence is the gateway. Abstinence is the beginning. If I'm not abstinent today, the rest of my journey doesn't matter. So every day, I was describing to you my mornings, you know, it's meditation, it's running, it's, you know, it's prayer. My food is always what comes next. I make my, what I call my bowl of goodness. And prepare my food. I really don't eat out at restaurants very much because the food can make me sick and they often don't follow my directions. So find what works for you. This is what works for me. Being in that joy is just something I never thought, but it didn't happen by accident. It happens with intention. It happens with focus. I realize I did not do a lot of quotes and my time is coming to a close. I will tell you that my favorite, when I first came in the room, the doctor's opinion is really what got me. Understanding, I'll just read a couple of quotes. In our page XXVI, in our opinion, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out the physical component is incomplete. My body is as abnormal as my mind. I know I have a genetic predisposition to this. I know it because I had it from the beginning. It's just the way I was made. XXVII, of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor, and often this requires a definitive hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit. Doesn't mean before they can be beneficial. Wherever you're at, start where you're at. Be you, do you. I did a good enough program. Let me tell you, the food, when I first did red, yellow, and green light foods, they're not the same as what I eat today. I got more and more restrictive as time went on, and I really understood two things, what works for my body and what is abstinent. For me, anything that's a certain size, poppable, I don't do it. I can't do it. Mini this, mini that, can't do it. And I don't drink anymore either. That's something I gave up this year. I set it aside. I always think if everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous, when they were first giving up drinking, if they said to them, by the way, you also have to be abstinent of whatever food, their numbers would be super low too. Because giving up drinking and eating, it's a big ask. It's a really big ask. So as I close today, I'd like to share with you on page 417, about acceptance, because this is what I believe. I do my routines. This is what makes me successful. I work recovery. If I don't work recovery, I don't have recovery. I work recovery every day. Yes, this is simple but not easy program, but it requires of me. And it's a choice I make. And the more recovered I am, the more choice I feel. So page 14, an acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be in this moment. First, I have to have abstinence, and then I have to have acceptance. And with that, I have increasing freedom, but not just freedom, joy. And I'm so thankful today. The more I live this way, the more free I am, the happier I am. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Jeannie. We're so appreciative, very practical and relatable, very down-to-earth presentation. So we're very appreciative of your time this morning. And just a couple of things before we transition to Q&A. First, please stick with us till the end of the recording. That's where we will provide Jeannie's contact information if you want to reach out to her after we're done. And Jeannie, again, is J-E-A-N-N-I-E. It's Jeannie B. from Florida. Let me also give you the share ID for this morning's presentation. That number is 22,990. That's 22990. So let's go ahead and transition to Q&A. Just a couple of things, just questions only, please. And if you have a question for Jeannie, press star one to unmute your phone and give me your first name, and we'll get in queue for questions for Jeannie. Who has a question?
Tina.
I heard Tina, and I believe I heard Tony. Who else?
Dana.
Anayeta and Elena. Anybody else? Tina, Tony, Dana, Anayeta, Elena.
Did you get Gail H?
Hi, Gail. I got you now. Who else? Okay. Well, Marge. Gotcha. Anybody else?
Bruce E.
Gotcha, Bruce.
New York.
And Elaine S. Okay, let's go ahead and stop there. We'll see where our time is after we get through this. So we got, here's who I heard: Tina, Tony, Dana, Hanayeta, Elena, Gail, Marge, Bruce, and Elaine. Let's see. Tina and Tony's wedding. That's a thing out here. Let's start with Tina, and then we'll go to Tony. Tina, good morning.
Thanks so much, Larry, for your service, and thank you so much, Jeannie. Wow, what a great message. You know, got to know you better. It's just a wonderful thing. My question, you know, over the years, I've seen people relapse and be back into food and not know why. And what I heard you say was that, you know, you do your morning meditation and stuff like that. But if you've ever had the thought, okay, let's just do this one bite, and what comes to mind for you, or what's your next action? What do you do with that thought? Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Tina. So great to hear you. So when I have thoughts, and I definitely do, of wanting some bite, sometimes what I'll do is I'll have, so this is just me. Sometimes I'll have a bite of something else that is a food, but it is not a problem. It's not a red light food for me. Sometimes what I'll do is put a delay tactic. Okay, if you feel this way in an hour, you'll have something. But it could be I'll have a bite of something super healthy. Could be a delay. Could be, hey, what do you really need right now? What's really going on? Sometimes I'm the halt. I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So if I can have enough presence of mind to ask what's really going on, I'll do that. Sometimes I don't have that. If I'm in a store, Tina, and I have that happen, I say one thing, get the hell out of the store. I've gotten myself out of food stores many a time by as soon as that food thought comes, saying get the hell out of the store. Just take your groceries right to the thing and get out. Get out. So sometimes the person who rescues me, that super ego, that wiser person in me, has different voices, and those are the different options for me. Thank you so much for asking.
Thanks, Tina. Okay, I got Tony followed by Dana. Tony, good morning.
Thanks, Larry. Oh, thank you so much, Jeannie. So I have a question here for you, Jeannie. Can you tell me a bit about your experience of working with others and that part of your step 12? Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. I thank you, and it was nice meeting you at the convention. My 12th step, I have sponsored people. That has been fine. It hasn't been my most favorite part. I do a ton of service. I do service on this line, and I do service locally at the meeting level and at the intergroup level. And that's what I do, just tons and tons and tons of service. But also, I pass on the word. I don't mind outing myself as an addict, especially because nobody looks at me and thinks I'm an addict. So I kind of want to say, like, people like me are addicts too. So I was recently at a gathering of family in Toronto, and around the room were a bunch of second cousins of mine, some of whom were my mother's, you know, like me before. And when I talked about what they asked, why do you eat this way? And I talked about, because I'm an addict. So that part of that 12th step for me is sharing, I'm an addict and here's what that looks like. So it's spreading the word and giving hope and giving possibility to those who are still suffering. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks, Tony. Dana, you're up, followed by Hannah Yetta. Good morning, Dana. I think I heard Dana. Maybe not. Okay, let's go on to Hannah Yetta, followed by Elena. Hannah Yetta?
Good morning. Sorry, it took me a minute. So thank you, Larry, for your service. And Jean B, thank you so much for what a wonderful presentation that you gave. I just really got a lot from what you said. One thing that kind of was standing out, though, you said so nonchalantly, I drowned. And then you said it again, I drowned. So apparently you were brought back to life. But what happened? I mean, I don't know. It was like, oh, it's no big deal. Another day in the neighborhood and I drowned. And anyway, I just was wondering if you could tell us how you became back again.
Sure. Thank you, Hanietta. It's so nice to meet you at the conference, Hanietta. When I was 11, I was behind. I didn't go into detail because it's outside of the scope of this meeting, but the very brief version is I was behind a boat on an inner tube, and I went through the middle as a joke. I thought it would be super cute to go down the middle and come out the other side, and I didn't. And it has been a huge thing in my life to have had a near-death experience and all that. So it's a cornerstone of my life, but I mentioned it here because it's important, but I didn't emphasize it because it's beyond what's important here in this talk today. But if you want to know more, Hanietta, please feel free to call me. Thank you. I pass.
Okay, thank you. And then Elena, followed by Gail. Elena, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Hello? Great. My name is Elena C. from South Carolina. Thank you so much for a wonderful presentation, Junie. you said something about full of feelings. And, you know, like, I wonder what tools of the program do you use when you have overwhelming feelings? And maybe if you have depression and anxiety, if you've ever experienced that, and what tools of the programs you use?
Thank you, Elena. Thank you very much, because you're mentioning a part that I didn't get to. I have gotten outside help for some of those issues that you're describing. We did have 3 hurricanes here last year. I live in St. Petersburg and Florida, and there were some other world events that were really crushing to me. So I have gotten outside help, not just then, but because I've had, I think, depression because of the way I eat, but it's also genetically, it's in my family too, but again, I don't know how much of that is because of what we eat. So in terms of managing my very big feelings, also my birth sign is known for very, very big and intense reactions and feelings. So it is definitely one of those things that has gotten iteratively better the more I work the program, because there's a self-reinforcing part. There's a positive feedback loop about being positive, giving service, and being kind and focusing on what I'm grateful for. Those are things I knew. I knew from my training. I'm a therapist. I knew that in my head. But I was unable to do it because my feelings overtook that knowledge. It's by being sober as long as I have been and being grounded in this material that I believe it slowly indoctrinated me increasingly and increasingly, so that these feelings, so I have more of a choice now. And part of that choice has been time to get some external help. And part of that choice has been, okay, what are you grateful for? Okay, this wasn't great. What was good about it? Like I was telling you about my first sponsor. Wasn't great, but she introduced me to vision. I could focus on all the things that weren't great, more of my tendency, more of my natural tendency before. But now I want to focus on, hey, there was also something good. I heard once that in every moment there are 64 million stimuli, and whatever we attend to, we choose what we attend to. And then what we attend to becomes bigger in our lives. I didn't feel that choice point before. But increasingly, as I sit here every day, mostly for 2 hours a day, and I get recovery, the more choice I have. So grateful for that. Thank you for asking, Elena. Pass.
Thanks, Elena. Okay, we have Gail followed by Marge. Gail, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Jeannie, for your talk. My question is, you mentioned that you continue to become more restrictive as time goes on in your food plan. And I'm wondering, I am too, and I'm wondering, I get mixed reviews from people on the topic of research and development regarding our food. Some people say that's really bad, and some people say it's necessary. Just wondering what your take is on that. Thank you.
Can I ask what you mean by research and development, please?
Like researching to find out for sure what your red foods are and how things affect you. Okay?
Gotcha. Do you mean versus having one formula of doing your own research and development? I'm going to assume that's what you mean. So for me, I started out with the basics. I knew all desserts, for example, were red light foods. But there were things I wasn't sure of, like cheese, like poppable things, like coffee creamer. There are things that I just wasn't sure were a problem for me. I wasn't sure they caused craving. And over time, there are just a lot of things that I was like, oh, this isn't a problem. I used to bake flour I didn't think was a problem. And so I would bake things that did not have sugar in them, only had a few ingredients that were in the whole food plant-based world. But I couldn't do it because I couldn't stop eating them. I would eat whatever I would make. I would wind up eating a portion, then eating another portion, and then eating the whole thing. So I was going back to it, not because I was hungry, but because I wanted it. So for me, the research and development was necessary, or the evolution, as I think of it, to a more restrictive. When I eat out, I get sick. Learn it. Jeannie, learn it. Don't repeat it. So I'm really careful when I go to restaurants and I don't go often. And then I just learned and learned and learned. And I think learning and evolving is really important. So I'm very narrow in what I eat now. And I'm telling you, I don't think most people live as narrowly as I do, and I don't care. Not only, I also love my food, but I don't crave it, and it doesn't have that hyper palatability. I love it in a general sense. I love it in a general sense, but I don't, I'm not making noises when I eat. I'm not, you know, making love to my food. It doesn't have the high of putting a needle in my arm like other foods did. Well, and I don't behaviorally find myself going back and, oh, I just want more. Oh, I just want just a little, no rationalization. If I'm rationalizing why I should have more, or if I'm minimizing what the impact of having more is, I'm out of balance. And I'm out of that recovered state of mind, that zone of recovery, that hum, when I'm humming along, that is what it sounds like. My food, my routine, my recovery, this. And when I get out of that flow, when I get out of that hum, I know it. It's clearer and clearer. The more I'm in the hum, the more it's clear when I'm out of it. and life and myself will knock me back in, because this is where I feel the best. It's not out of some devotion to some other thing. It's purely selfish. This is where I feel the best. So I want to feel this more. I love it. Thank you, I pass.
Thanks, Gail. Okay, next up on the question is Marge, followed by Bruce. Good morning, Marge.
Hi, Marge, Ellen, Connecticut. Oh, Jeannie, thank you. So helpful and hopeful. I'm not recovered yet. Pretty abstinent and pretty usually food neutral. I had to socialize last night for like 3.5 hours over food. And I'm hearing a lot of your answers right now. I don't know if I should have been there or not, but I felt like I had to. What would you do in that case?
Okay, so you had to socialize over food for 3 hours?
It was my sister-in-law's 60th birthday, and I felt like I had to go, but maybe I didn't have
to. Were you
to
at
go.
A table? Were you
yeah.
at a table?
Yes.
For 3 hours?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, that's...
They did all
hors
d'oeuvres and big meal.
All the
and
things.
Dessert. Yeah.
So I just had my birthday, and a friend of mine put on a nice dinner party at a restaurant, at a great restaurant. It was very similar, a really long dinner where everybody's eating and drinking. I don't drink anymore, so they're having cocktails and appetite, all the things that I don't eat. I focused on, and I even ordered, I called ahead. I talked to the restaurant. I said, I don't have oil. I don't have this. You know, like I gave them all the things. Can you, and I even asked, is this possible? Can you accommodate? Because I don't want to assume and I don't want to put them out too much, because then they won't do it. They'll get it wrong if they're not comfortable with it. So I called them. I told them what I could eat, and they didn't do a great job with it. And it was my birthday. And normally I would have been pretty pouty about that, because Scorpios love their birthdays, I think. Well, I did. And instead I just was like, you know what? I'm going to focus on the people. I'm going to focus on how grateful I am that all these people came to celebrate my birthday. And I just turned, I ate a little bit of the food. I didn't even eat that much because it wasn't that good. And I just turned and I really engaged and felt grateful for the people who were there. And I was able to do that because of how far I am in my recovery, Marge. And if you're not there, please be patient with yourself and stay out of situations. Maybe go for shorter, or maybe eat before you go something, or just train your eyes. Don't look at the table. Do whatever tips and tricks you need to do to guard your recovery. I guard my recovery. I'm just lucky enough that 3.5 years in, I'm at a point where I don't need as many guards. But when I did, guard it. Guard it. Nothing's more important to me than my recovery, because my recovery is what makes my life work. It's the reason I'm happy. It's because I'm recovered. Thank you. Bless you. Pass.
Thanks, Marge. Okay, Bruce, it's your turn with a question, followed by Elaine. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Jeannie. This is Bruce. I'm in Florida. And let's see. A couple of things I had questions about. One is, you said that you were more comfortable for people to be around. I think you said that, and I think I've gotten better at that, but I just wondered how you got there to that point, if that's what you said. Then the other one is, if you go to regular OA, just meetings, face-to-face meetings, how you handle that, since vision is a little different from regular OA, how you do that, if you do. Thank you.
Okay, stay on the line, because I'm sure I'm going to have you repeat one of those. Question number one, yes, I am easier. It is easier for people to be around me now. How I got there was I didn't aim for that. First of all, I didn't even know that was a problem. So I wasn't aiming. That was not a goal of mine. It wasn't a derivative of recovery. It was a collateral benefit that other people got in my life, and I got, is I became a better person. You know, for me, this program requires rigorous honesty, requires constantly looking at myself to say, where am I responsible? It requires me to look at, where am I showing irritation? Where am I So it was in that recovery. Even the first couple of iterations where I say I was doing a good enough program, even then, people were starting to see a different me. I was slow to improve. I was a step-by-step kind of recovery. And people at some point looked at me and noticed a difference. I didn't ask. It was just like somebody was like, wow, you're easier to be around. Wow, you're not so judgmental anymore. So that was that. And in terms of in-person meetings, I go to in-person meetings here in St. Pete, and I'm part of the intergroup here. And yes, vision is different. So there was somebody on this line who challenged me one morning. He said, you say you're in-person meeting. I won't try and do him. But you say your in-person meetings aren't recovered like vision is. They're not supposed to be recovered. You bring that recovery to your in-person meeting. Your recovery, you bring them. You take that vision, you bring it to your in-person meeting. So challenged by him, that's what I do. And see how he opened me up, gave me some more pieces. I'm not there to take. I'm there to bring vision to the degree that I can. Not in an arrogant way, not in a haughty way, but by showing up recovered, showing up humble, willing to serve with a smile on my face, and being grateful, bringing joy. That's all I need to do. Thank you, I pass.
Thanks, Bruce. Okay, Elaine S., it's your turn. Good morning.
Hi, this is Elaine S. from New York. And Jeannie, I want to thank you so much for just a wonderful share. I can so relate to so much of your experience. The only difference is that I've had a number of relapses. I've never left the rooms, and I've had to tell my sponsor, which was really hard, but I got back. But my question for you is, I find that 10 steps really saved my life, but I'm not always aware that I need to do a 10-step. And I wonder if you have that experience and how you figure out you need to do it and how you do a 10-step. Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. So I, too, sometimes don't know I need to do a 10-step, and sometimes I'm just telling you it's not flattering, but sometimes I rationalize why I don't need to do a 10-step. I get an awareness of, oh, you're being irritable, or, oh, that wasn't very nice, and I'm just like try to reel it back in and get back on track rather than doing a 10th step. So where I get more serious about a 10th step is if I find a second time or I'm coming back to that same irritation. And the way I do it, that's where I was describing to you the process of that's a little different for me, which is I start with venting my frustration because I have that emotion in my cells and in my body. So I need a minute to be like, I'm so irritated that, but I don't give myself long, and you heard the growl in there. I'm so irritated that this happened. So I give myself a place of to be, I know it's wrong, meaning to be the victim. I know I'm not a victim. I give myself that place to have that emotion just come out from a childish place, right? And then I do a growl of like, ugh. And then I turn to, okay, where are you selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or fearful? And then I have that list of questions, but I really never get past the first couple. But I really do that step, like, deeply. Okay, that person didn't follow your script. Okay, it always hits me when I say, did that person not follow your script, Jeannie? Oh, yeah, that driver didn't follow my script. Oh, yeah, that person didn't follow my script. And then I'm like, okay, well, that's you being selfish again. The world's not going to follow your script. This is just the way it is. This is exactly how life is supposed to be in this moment. This is just the way it is. And then I kind of laugh at myself because it's kind of stupid that I think everybody should follow my script to begin with. So it just catches me up short, and it changes my mindset immediately. So now it's like, oh, of course they shouldn't follow my script. So I say a quick prayer, bless them, change me usually, or God help them, they're sick, me too, and turn to be of service. And it doesn't have to be of service, like I need to make a phone call to a fellow unless it's something more big, but it can just be like, okay, go take the dog for a walk, go clean up your house, go get out of my own head, get out of my selfishness is the point. Get out of my world just being about Jean. Thank you, I pass.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the question, Elaine S. So we have time for perhaps a couple, maybe two or three more questions. We're here. So if you have a question, press star one and give me your name. You have a question for Jeannie.
Rosie. What?
Not your Maura.
Rosie F.
Rosie, was there some? And Leah. Let's stop there. Maura, Rosie, Leah. Was there somebody else that had already mentioned their name that I missed? Okay, let's stick with Maura, Rosie, and Leah. Maura, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for your service. Jeannie, thank you so much for that amazing share this morning, and your vulnerability really touched me. I do have one question, and that is something that I struggle with, and just wondering, you didn't touch much on it, but could you share what you include in your spiritual practices?
Oh, I'd be honored to do so. My spiritual practice means so much to me. So, you know, I have this, everybody has a connection to the other side, I know that, but I feel like I have this very special connection since I was there at one point. And so I spend every morning, first thing in the morning, I listen. This is exactly what I do. I say the prayer that I said at the beginning of this, surrender to the flow of the universe. I look for the open and the closed doors before me. All is well and all will be well. Amen and amen. I listen to a 15-minute meditation, which I'm happy to share with you. I get it off of YouTube. It's a different variation by the same people who put them out and sets me into a spiritual vibration. I then get a black coffee. I sit with my laptop and I listen. And I let the voices of universal wisdom, the voices of the spirits, the voices of my guides, the voices of God, whatever you want to call it, I let the voices speak to me. And if I have a question, I love two-way prayer. But if I don't have a question that morning and I just want to say, guide me, show me, I don't even have to say anything. I just open my laptop, put my fingers on the keyboard and listen. And I write whatever comes. I love it. And then through the day, I do try to remember to pause and say, you know, but I do wind up saying, okay, what's the right thing here? What would you have me do? Little nuggets, but I would imagine I'll be doing that more and more as my recovery continues. That is my amazing practice. And my life, there are a couple of days I have missed meditation in the last year, like literally maybe 2 days in a year, and my day isn't the same. Without that centering time with spirit, oh, that's my compass. That's my North Star. That's everything. Thank you, I pass.
Thanks, Maura. Okay, Rosie, it's your turn. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Rosie, and I'm covered in California. I wanted to know, can you give me examples of working the spiritual principles in your recovery?
What do you mean by working the spiritual principles?
Well, we're giving the principles of recovery, you know, like self-control, love, kindness, patience.
Okay. So thank you for that clarification. I was thinking the same thing, but I wanted to make sure we're on the same page. So I think of those as, in a sense, the derivatives of my recovery are I am a better person. The 12 steps really, by definition, if I am working the steps, since I'm working the steps, I'm becoming kinder. I'm becoming more generous. I'm becoming more loving. I'm giving more benefits of the doubt. More grace, more. I'm offering more patience. These are the spiritual, you know, I'm honest and I have you know, respectful boundaries. I respect other people's boundaries. So I believe that this entire spiritual experience, once I became abstinent, or each day as I become abstinent, I'm abstinent and I practice the steps. And with that is the heart of the spiritual principles. So I think of those really as the heart of the program. But they aren't what I intend to do. They are who I have become increasingly and continue, because I'm a work in progress. I continue to become increasingly kind, compassionate, all the beautiful spiritual principles as I continue to work recovery, because I am more and more free and I am more and more thankful. And with that, I ooze out this heart of recovery more and more. Thank you, I pass. I hope that answered your question.
Thanks, Rosie. Okay, Leah, it's your turn.
Hi, thanks. Am I unmuted?
You are.
Oh, thank you. I just absolutely so resonated with what you've been sharing this morning. Thank you so much. I love what you said about the affirming yourself and speaking kindly yourself that you've learned over the years. And my question is simple. What's in your bowl of goodness in the morning?
Well, thanks for asking. I was hoping somebody would ask that. So within my bowl of goodness is old-fashioned oats, not cooked, a cup, so it's a lot. This is what I eat for two meals every day. So a cup of old-fashioned oats, a tablespoon of chia seeds, a bunch of cinnamon, and I have probably 3/4 of a cup or 2/3 of a cup of frozen blackberries and blueberries, and then another 2/3 of a cup of frozen strawberries, and then some frozen mango, and then a whole banana, and then a whole big apple. Oh, and then, oh, by the way, soy protein powder, this amazing soy protein powder that has no sweetener in it. It's purely unsweetened. I get that off of Amazon, and I put 1.5 scoops of that in because I'm low on protein if I don't have that. But that's crucial to my life. So that's what I have. I put a bunch of water on there and I let it soak for a couple of hours before I head out for my run. And then it's ready for me when I have my first meal. I eat about 2/3. And then a few hours later, I eat the other 1/3. Thank you for asking. Bowl of goodness.
Yeah, thanks, Leah. And we'll wrap up at this point. And Jeannie, thank you so much. We're so appreciative of your time this morning. A beautiful presentation, great contribution to the archives. And so we're going to close in just a moment, but just please stick around. We'll get Jeannie's contact information at the end of the recorded portion. We might even teach you the special Vision for You handshake. If you ask Jeannie, she might teach you that. I'll have to learn that too. But anyway, the share ID for the presentation this morning is 22,990. That's 22990. So we're now going to close my reading from the big book on page 164, and I'll read that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.